started within your mind.
Yeah.
Constellations. Yeah, there's billions of planets. They're moving around. The planets are distinguished from stars in that they're not fixed to the zodiac. The stars are fixed to the zodiac. So zodiac means constellations, they just stay exactly. They all have exactly the same 24-hour period. But the planets, they have different speeds. They go along with it, but not exactly. Slightly different speeds. Therefore, you have what appears to be retrograde motion. The moon goes a little slower. The sun goes slightly slower, like that.
Something about this pole star. Is it part of this material world or is it part of the spiritual world?
It's in this universe, but there's a place there called Sveta Dweep, or the ocean of milk, where Lord Vishnu lives. So it's also considered to be a local Vaikuntha planet. In other words, the Lord has, just like he manifests Vrindavan when Krishna personally came, Vrajesha Tariyam Taddhamam Vrindavanam. So he comes, but he brings his abode Vrindavan also. So similarly, he has established a Vaikuntha planet here in this universe.
Are there more of these earthly planets in this universe where human beings live? Or are they all human beings in this planet?
No, what we consider the earthly plane, Bhumandala, is very vast. The earth is just a pinprick, a pinpoint. It goes out all the way to the end of the universe. It's a more or less flat. And then there's seven circular islands that go out. We're in the first one, Jambudvip. We're part of Jambudvip. Then outside of Jambudvip, there's another island, then another one, there's seven going out. And they're very vast. So there's human beings living in that whole earthly region.
Perhaps a little bit connected with this, so sometimes we hear descriptions about UFOs. So are they actually real? And where do these entities come from and what is their business?
Well, as far as what people have claimed that they have seen, we can't comment on because we don't have any absolute evidence. We do have evidence from the scriptures that there are such things that seem to resemble what people say flying saucers are, or UFOs. So, all the people that have given their testimonies, whether they've actually seen them or not, that we cannot comment on. But whether such things do exist, we can say that things that fit the description of what a UFO is, yes. Like Shalva. Shalva had a flying machine that fit all the descriptions of modern UFO writings.
Guru Maharaj, I would like to know this. Is it so that this Earth planet is part of the Chandelier, or is it the lower pole? This, like this Chandelier, but it seems to be lower pole, and then poles.
Yeah, the Earth is not moving.
Yeah.
The Earth is on the flat Earth. The Chandelier moves around above the Earth.
Here, this lower regions, these lower heavenly planets, and but also the other. This is. It was mentioned that you have to go there through long tunnels.
Tunnels.
But is it also said that they are like planets? So.
Yeah. You have to go 80,000 miles down underground for the first one. Then you have to go another 80,000 miles below that to reach the second one. And then each one going down seven. And they're Bila, the word Bila means holes. They're in holes. They're underground. Bila Svarga means they're subterranean, under the earth. The earth, you could think of it, the earth is, if the earth is this thick, and we're on the top of the earth, then there's one level down, second level, third level, fourth level, like that.
That's connected to this, in this presentation, earth was described like this ball, like modern scientists think also. So it's not in the core of this ball, it is in...
Below.
Below this Bhumanga.
Yes, because there's not 80,000 miles within our earth, we only have 20,000 mile diameter.
But there is
or 8,000 mile diameter.
But there is some connection maybe, because I've heard that there is somehow the lower, from the lower reaches, they can come through this earth, through this globe from some hole. So well, there is maybe some connection.
You heard that from where? Vedic or just from kind of popular sources? Popular sources, you know, we can't use as authoritative. We have to use Vedic evidence in order to establish anything that's permanent. Otherwise, you know, people can give different theories, but they're always changing and they don't have any substance. Yes.
And what's the difference between actually Brahma's one day when it ends and Brahma's total life when it ends? How actually the destruction of the universe takes place?
Well, when Brahma's life is over, then all the universe goes back into Mahavishnu. The inhalation. So then there's no more manifestation. That's avyukta. So at the end of his day, he goes to sleep, and there's a partial destruction. Some of, up to a certain level of the planetary systems are not functional. There's all different types of partial annihilations after each Mayu. Then there's different floods. And at the end, at the final end, then there's a complete flood, fire, and then annihilation. But on a daily basis, it's not complete, it's partial annihilation.
Are they also rotationist movement?
Are they?
Rotationist movement also in those other planets.
Are they in Lord Chaitanya's movement?
I mean, are they practicing also spiritual life, those human beings, other planets? Because as far as...
Yes, they're devotees. As far as whether they are involved with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, that may not be mentioned, but it describes in detail in the Bhagavatam that on different islands they worship different forms of the Lord. On one island they worship Lord Srinidhi, another island they worship Lord Ramachandra, another island they worship Kurma, another island they worship Vraha, like that.
Maharaj, in Mahabharata and also in Bhagavatam about Maharaj Pariksit, there has been described that they go to some other earthly, some like other place in Bhumanga, just by like walking there, and there is some description that they go north and then they can go to like another place. Can you give some insight?
Yeah, there are subtle features of the Bhumandala which we are not able to perceive with our eyes because we're not qualified. But those who are more qualified can not only perceive them, but they can also go there. And what the Mahabharata describes is that they go to a certain point, they offer prayers to the deities there, to Kuvera or whoever, and they get passage. And then they're allowed to go further. They chant some mantras. They're given mantras. You can't go beyond unless you learn the mantra. And you have to chant, and you have to be pure to chant the mantra. And if you chant the mantra, then you're taken to the next level. Like that.
Yes, Guru Maharaj, about this upper systems like Tapaloka and Satyaloka, they are above the Chandelier,
yeah.
That they are not part of.
No, yeah. They're not rotating.
So Chandelier is only the Svargaloka.
It starts from Polestar. Polestar is at the top of Svargaloka, and it includes the also the middle space, Antariksha. That's called outer space or inner space. So that's also included.
Maharaj, in the Western conception, they have some certain idea of the planets. Like, you know, Saturn is described as a ball, which has some kind of wheel around it, and like that. So, firstly, I'd like to know how accurate it is, or is it at all accurate? And another thing is that, like, in the Vedas, they have very different understanding, like Saturn is shiny and there is some personality there. So is the planet just like this Earth planet with some inhabitants there, or is it just this personality? What are these planets?
Your first question is how accurate are their descriptions of Saturn? Well, I don't think they give so much. They just give more or less a kind of a visual picture or something like that. Maybe, I don't know. And as far as, I mean, you know, they're taking photographs of, you know, with powered photographs, so perhaps that could be accepted. As far as Shani, yes, he's the presiding deity of Saturn, and there are living beings there. Every planet has life. So they have a whole community there, people living.
And also in the Western conception, they many times speak about this Hubble telescope, which is always like getting new ideas of the universe. So how do we like relate with these ideas?
Well, we may be able to get some information, but from telescopes, just like if you use a telescope, it allows you to see a little more accurately. And these are powerful telescopes, so we can see a bit more. But because the eyes are also imperfect, and whatever instruments that we make with our imperfect senses will also retain some imperfectness, we can't accept them as the final authority. In other words, if we have to choose which system to follow, we choose the authority of the Vedas, because it's given by personalities like Brahma and other persons who have been involved in the design of the universe. They know best how the universe has functioned. Krishna, Brahma, Shukadeva Goswami, Narada Muni, these persons have confirmed the Vedic version.
Maharaj, do you have any like vision how maybe in future we can more give evidence through like empiric method to this Vedic one? Is there any way getting like proving it with some empiric things?
Prove it with empiric? That's what Prabhupada wanted scientists to do, to take the Vedic evidence as factual and then try to use their scientific abilities to prove it. That's our approach. Our approach is we accept it as infallible knowledge, first of all. And then, of course, they become, the Western view is that they don't accept anything as infallible except their system of empiric knowledge. So they accept that as infallible. We accept the descending process, that the knowledge is coming from a perfect source. Then, if our senses happen to corroborate it, fine. If you can use empiric evidence to corroborate it, that's very nice. But otherwise, we still have to accept it, because it may be beyond our empiric perception.
And that's this Antariksha, where are these places of Rakshas and Bhutas and other those beings. So these are relatively near to us. So are they like a shuttle planets or
the Vedas and Puranas say that there's different sizes of planets, and the smallest one, they say, is I think it's something like 1 yojana, 8 miles diameter. So there can be very small planets also, and of course they might seem very far away because of their size being small, but actually they can be much closer, several hundred miles away, things like that. And which ones are which in the sky? Which ones are Yaksha's planets and which ones? That information is not specifically given, at least. Bhagavatam gives a kind of a summary or codes of different subjects in the field of cosmology. It gives a kind of overview, a summary. It doesn't give every detail. There are other Vedic scriptures which go into more details, such as the Siddhantas, they go into more details. Ayurveda. Bhagavatam also gives some information about health and longevity and medicine, but the Ayurveda goes into more detail. Subsequent.
This problem had the question that why is this Earth planet the only stationary planet and why are the others rotated?
She's, Earth is holding up. She's, booming. She's, therefore she's so highly honored because she's giving support. That's her particular responsibility to do that. As far as why the Lord has established it in that way, that's a transcendental question. Lord, why He arranges the sun to move around? The sun is always moving, and the planets are also moving, and the stars are moving, but the Earth is stationary.
Continued the question by asking that, is this somehow a better place than the others?
Well, Bharatvarsha is considered to be a very special place. We are part of Bharatvarsha. Even within the whole Bhumandala, Bharatvarsha is highly respected. Why? Because there, in this place, it is called the Karma Bhumi, which means that one performs his activities here and he can either go up or down or stay the same. For example, in the other planets or the other positions, there, some of them are higher, so they use up their karma. Whereas in Earth, one has the, or Bharatvarsha, one has the opportunity to perform pure devotional service very easily. And therefore, the demigods, they like to take birth, they would like to come to Bharatvarsha, because in one very short lifetime, on Bharatvarsha, one can achieve the perfection of pure devotional service. This is stated in Bhagavatam. The demigods are there thinking, oh, it would be so nice to take birth in Bharatvarsha. But we have a very good opportunity to be living here in Bharatvarsha. And Krishna personally came only 5,000 years ago. Once in a day of Brahma, he comes. And a day of Brahma is 8,600,000,000 years, day and night. And Krishna came only 5,000 years ago. And Lord Chaitanya came only 500 years ago. So we better get serious. We're not going to get a better opportunity than this. You can't beat this opportunity that we have to so easily take to devotional service and go back to home, back to Godhead. One lifetime, 50, 60 years, 100 years of devotional service, and you go back. You want something easier than that? No. Better take it. There's many different abodes. These demigods, they have different abodes. Also, Lord Shiva is out on one of the islands. He's also got an abode there. These personalities, they of course can travel very quickly, very easily, wherever they like to go. Sometimes they also expand themselves, so can have different. It's like there's millions of Lord Shivas. There's not just one Lord Shiva. Every universe has a Lord Shiva, so there's millions dealing with extraordinary personalities. Bharadvarsha is a portion of Jambudvip, and within Bharadvarsha there are the nine islands, of which one is Bharatkhanda, which is our earth, sometimes called Navadvip, nine islands.
The other khandas, they are also making karma, they are also making fruit of
bhakti. That's right, Bharadvarsha.
So these other khandas, do we observe them?
We don't see them because they're quite far away. And for example, during daytime, you can only see, I think, not more than 100 miles because the sun is so bright that our vision, we can't see very far. You may have noticed that. If you look out, visibility on a clear day, what is it? 20 miles, 30 miles maximum, you can't see. So, and they're quite some distance away. They looked close on the video because we're looking at the whole thing, but that distance between them, you know, can be thousands of miles away. So we're thousands of miles of, or more than that, of oceans.
Maharaj, if you look from any point of our earth globe to any direction, so everywhere we see like stars, so it appears that there is no such like Pumangal disk or anything. It seems that everywhere we look there is, but it's somehow curved or how. How to explain this?
Well, of course, the sky is, we have stars throughout the sky, and the what we are allowed to see or what we're seeing, we can't exactly say how we're being able to see things. It's being arranged by higher authorities. Just like if you go into a country, you enter a country, so you're allowed to, they made you go through a particular building and sort of corridors, and you have to go and see what they allow you to see. In our present condition, this is what we are allowed to see with our vision. We can't see everything, that's for sure. And certain things are simply not visible to us, but we're able to see some things. And that's due to our limitations. It's like certain species, they can see certain distances. Birds can see quite clearly, they have good eyesight. Other animals don't have such good eyesight. But still they're living beings, but according to their bodies, they have a certain that they can see. In the same way, we have been given a certain ability to perceive the universe up to a certain extent. So, we're fortunate, and there's a particular arrangement that we can see certain important stars, like of course the sun, the moon, and other stars we are able to see. But there is some differences. For example, when you go to the southern hemisphere, you don't see the same things that you see from the northern hemisphere. And this is quite amazing also. We, in our study, we don't claim to have full knowledge of the universe. That's quite a deep subject, and Shukadeva Goswami has said that even if one has a lifetime as long as Brahma, he will not be able to understand the universe fully. We don't claim to understand it fully. But based on Prabhupada's request that we can make a model in a planetarium, that we can give with some degree of confidence and accuracy based on the scriptures. But as far as all the details, of course, devotees, scientists can go deeper and deeper into the Puranas and to the Vedas, and they'll find more and more information. So if you're interested in that, you can pursue that path of knowledge.
Maharaj, can you explain something about Kundalini Chakra?
About
Kundalini Chakra, or Shishumara.
Shishumara. Yes, it's a kind of a mental, it's a form of the Lord, but and it is an incarnation of the Lord, and the planets are taken. It's like a universal form in the sense that you have this form of a dolphin, and the different constellations make up the different parts of the dolphin. But it is an incarnation of the Lord. It says Munis, they perceive the planets in that way, as a dolphin.
The mid part of the dolphin is called.
The tail is at the top with the pole star, so its head is downward. Good.
Maharaj, there is in Bhagavatam different descriptions of universal force, which are very much different.
Different descriptions of
the universal form. So, do you have any idea or any words or how they are put together? These different.
Well, for example, to give you an idea about Meru, the different Puranas, they say that even looking at Meru, different personalities give completely different descriptions. One sees it as many-sided, one sees it as this color, one sees it like that, one sees it as round. We're dealing with extraordinary things, and therefore there may be some variance in the descriptions, different universal forms.
What is the significance of the 100 thousand rays of the sun.
With these rays, you can think of them as like energies. Just like with electricity, what are the things you can do with electricity? You can do so many different things. Right? You can have sounds, you can have a sound system, you can have visuals, you can have heat, cold, you can have so many thousands of different things you can do with electricity. So the sun has his different energies, and he does different things. For example, one of the rays creates snow. The sun's rays create snow. All different things. The sun is really like the electrical, the energy headquarters. And from there, everything. Even the light and the energies of the different planets are provided by the sun. For example, with one of his rays, he provides the energy for the moon, for the light. Although the moon has its own light, but it's also coming from one of the rays of the sun. That's very miraculous how the sun's energies are distributed in different things.
Is it sun's movement is like a spiral that is going around mirror like
mm-hmm.
like this
mm-hmm.
and then going down
mm-hmm. so, yeah, but it's quite some distance away. It's about 109 miles away from mirror, so it doesn't get that close.
The middle point of this up and down motion is just at the same level with Earth or Bhuma. Because it goes
the middle level, yes, that would be the like the summer solstice where the days and nights are half and half, 12 hours.
So it goes a little bit under Earth. And then it lightens the southern.
Yeah. Yeah. The sun's chariot is on Manasotra mountain, and then you have Meru, and then there's an axle. So yes, pretty much as the sun's going around in its middle position, it's lighting half and half, and then when it goes in the lower, then in the upper you get no light, and when it goes in the upper, then the lower gets no light. They get only darkness. It's like now you're getting light because the sun is on the upper Uttarayana.
So it's going a little bit under Bhuman, a little bit like give light to bottom of the earth, so to say.
It has to go down, yeah.
It goes to have to go a little bit under that Bhuman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also a question about this eclipses, so how is it like if there is a lunar eclipse, for instance, so how is this Rahu involved and what is the function of the Earth's shadow in this eclipse, and is there some connection?
The Vedas say that Rahu is the Earth's shadow. So Western science also says that it's the shadow of the earth. But they don't recognize Rahu. So we recognize that Rahu is a planet that is constructed out of the earth's shadow. Rahu is a real person, a real planet, invisible and dark. In other words, simply, if we say that the Earth's shadow, that may be part of the picture, but if we go further, then we find that there's actually a personification and a planet that's constructed out of the Earth's shadow.
Is it like shadow matter in
mm-hmm.
Is it gross or shadow matter?
Not so much information that we have on that, as far as, but it's made of matter.
That we know.
We know that it's a material, and at least it may be subtle for us. We're not able to perceive it so well with our vision. One over here.
Maharaj, from our eyes, what we can see, there are many stars, and they all are inhabited, like there are inhabited. And then we say that there is this 8,400,000 forms of life only, but we see many stars only. So, this counting, how it is done, like 8,400,000.
Well, you could look at it that there's something like 330 million demigods. So, and each planet has a demigod in charge, so you can get some idea like that. Not necessarily on the species, because we have many thousands of species on this planet. Some of the species that are not here are on other planets, and we have some that may not be present on other planets. But there's all those demigods, and they're in charge of different planets.
What is that matter which surrounds the universe?
Surrounds the universe. Begins with earth, then water, then fire, then air, and ether. Like that, subtle elements. It's enclosed, airtight. And no light gets in. That's why we don't accept the theory of millions of different, of that there's different suns and different galaxies. Of course, there may be some difference in terminology, but as far as the Vedic view, it's all enclosed, and what we're seeing is all within our universe. We know that there are other universes outside, but we're not able to see them because our universe is blocked. It was dark. When Brahma was born, everything was dark. That because there was no light, there was no sun coming in. So what scientists are saying are galaxies and quasars and other, we would rephrase that and say they are different constellations and combinations of stellar dust and things like that, which is what they said before also. Only recently they've changed it now. And of course we know modern science is always changing. It's not, it doesn't remain. They change their views about things. And because they don't really have any proof, any evidence of anything. How can you give us evidence of a galaxy that's 100 million light years away? We just have to take your word for it. If we doubt it, then how can you prove it to me? What kind of evidence can you give me? Or is someone going to go there and come back? If it's 100 million light years away, I have to wait till they come back and then I can take the evidence? That's a long wait. I'm only living 50 or 100 years. So in this way, it's very easy to present things which have no provability.
But Maharaj, how do they then, like, they don't pick it out from some cat, but they have some...
Oh, they don't?
How do they? Or where do they get that idea?
Yes, the deeper you go, the more you find the hat, probably. So just keep going deeper and you'll see more and more of the hat will become revealed.
Maharaj, when Lord Kapila took his last death and he met the whole with the covering of the universe, so did he went through all the
coverings?
Yeah.
Yeah, he went to the coverings because then the water from the causal ocean came through. So he kicked all the way up. Therefore he's known as Trivikram or Urukram, great step. Well, sometimes they're described as being like a cluster of grapes, like a bunch of grapes, and they're floating on the causal ocean. But there may be different clusters also, and we're talking about just imagine how many vines with grape clusters do we have on Earth? In millions. So just imagine how many. Yasyaika nisho sitakala matala lamya jivanti loma vilaja jagadanda nata. There's millions and millions and billions of universes. They're just like little clusters of grapes. So we're really quite small. But we think we're quite big. And we like to give theories about what's going on out there in the universe with our little telescopes. We can hardly see anything.
Maharaja, did Lord Brahma lose his lotus flower? Because in this field there was turtle. Where is Vishnu now?
The Madhva Sampradaya, they say that the stem of the universe was, the stem of the lotus was used for constructing different parts of the universe. Then we learn that there's also statements that the planetary systems are situated within the lotus stem. In one place it says that they're emanating, they're coming out from the stem. So there's still quite a bit, of course, to know. We don't claim that we have, you know, full understanding of it, but just like we can speak according to our understanding, according to our level of learning. So Shukadeva Goswami has given this information. It's corroborated by all the different Puranas and the Mahabharata. So this much we can say. Already what we're giving is so far beyond what the modern science is giving, so there's really no comparison. You don't have to feel sorry that we're not giving enough. We're already giving so much more that there's a design, that how it's being designed, there's personalities, all the details of the functions of the movements of the universe tally with what we see. And their theory, if it turns out that it's not heliocentric as they are presenting, then their whole theory falls apart because it's all based on the Big Bang theory, heliocentricity. So that's why they don't talk about geocentric. They don't give you those quotes of Einstein and others very much because they don't want that to be thought about very deeply. Because if it's presented, that if you say, well, all right, let's say we take the geocentric model, what happens? Well, all their galactic theories and galaxies, it all falls apart. So therefore, they don't like to talk about that very much.
Maharaj, what would Stephen Hawking like about this DVD, and if he was inspired about it, so could he make some kind of a formula to like explain these Vedic planets?
You would need some spiritual inspiration to do that. I don't know how spiritual he is. Perhaps, maybe he'll get to see it. Someone might like to send him one. Yeah, that would be a nice idea. It'd be interesting to see what he thought of it. You know, these bright thinkers, they're not so closed-minded, just like you saw Carl Sagan. He was very open to the idea. He liked it. He was fascinated by the Vedic view. He said it's better than all other, at least all other religious presentations. He had no question about that. So, and what is that? Fritzov Capra, I don't know if I pronounced his name properly. Where is he from? Dane or?
Austria.
Oh, Austria, that's right. How is it pronounced?
Fritzov Capra.
Thank you. Better pronunciation. So he also was intrigued by the Vedic model.
Could it be so that this three-dimensional model is not enough even to explain the universe? There is lots of more, like dimensions or something.
Well, just like Prabhupada commissioned his artist to paint pictures of Goloka Vrindavan and Krishna's pastimes. We know that they're not only beyond the material, they're even spiritual. What kind of dimension is that? It's beyond our dimension. But still, he wanted them to be depicted. Just like the deity comes, he agrees. He's actually Krishna, he can't even be seen by ordinary eyes. But he agrees to come in the form of the Archamurti to reveal himself before the people and to be worshipped and touched by them and dressed. And he accepts the offerings and so many things. So in a similar way, Prabhupada wanted to construct a Vedic planetarium to show in three-dimensional space, as far as possible, the makeup of the universe. Now, you could make an argument that it's not possible to depict it in this way, and that might be a reasonable argument, but Prabhupada felt it was important to present it because we're giving some idea that we're explaining that the Vedas have the information, and if you become qualified, then you can, that knowledge can be revealed to you more and more. Even when we speak of our Vedic knowledge about things, we don't go into explicit details. We say the law of karma. Just imagine, if you really wanted to go into understanding the law of karma, you'd have to understand how Yamaraj and the different demigods are keeping track of every single action and how the weight of one action, and a good one, counteracts a bad one, and the different karma. Then they have to decide, they put the whole thing together, compute it at the end of life, and then they decide which type of body he is qualified for of the 8,400,000 species. And even within those species, there's so many variations. You know, different. You may be a cocker spaniel dog, but you may be born in a nice family where you get nice food, or you may be born in a cocker spaniel where you get immediately attacked and beaten. So there's all different varieties of karmic reactions which have to be taken into consideration. And what kind of technology do they have? What type of subtle technology they understand? It's even said that Yamaraj, he doesn't even have to necessarily directly experience. He knows everything by special divine arrangement of the Lord. So the information is given in a somewhat of a summary or a synopsis. But if you really wanted to get into the detail, then probably you would end up on Yamaraj Loka, Yamaloka, you could go there, and be one of his assistants, and you get into the details, the technical aspects of how it's done. And eventually you could also become Yamaraj. You could have that position. You can also become Brahma, you can become all these different demigods. So then the science gets more involved. But we're just given enough information so that our curiosity is somewhat pacified, and we have some idea of how things are going on, and we can see how it's being controlled by the higher authorities, and we can make our arrangements to get out of this place, not to stay here. That's the real purpose of the Vedas, not to get so excited about this material world that we want to stay here.
Maharaj, in this field, it was also mentioned, and we experienced how in these northern areas the day is very long, and even in the North Pole it is 6 months sunlight and 6 months night. So how is it connected with the heavenly planets? Is there some subtle connection from the North Pole to the heavenly planets where demigods have like day and night, 6 months?
The day and night of the demigods is also based on the Uttarayan induction. In other words, when the sun goes in its lower level, it doesn't reach, the rays of the sun don't go unlimitedly. They have their boundaries. This was quite a, there were so many things, of course, as we were studying that, when we discovered them, we were quite amazed. But we came into the idea that the sun's rays just go practically forever, but they don't. They have their limit. And once they reach their limit, it's darkness after that. So it so happens that when the sun is in its lower, the rays don't reach up to the heavenly planets, therefore it's their nighttime. Their one day equals our 6 months. So they're connected.
Maharaj, what to speak of this Tapaloka, Maharaloka, Brahmaloka? They don't get any light.
Actually, they're much brighter than our sun. It's even said in one of the Puranas that when the sun's rays come to Meru, when they start to approach Brahma's abode there on the top of Meru, they're repelled back. His effulgence is so great that it pushes back the rays of the sun. They cannot enter there. So,
is there only one sun?
There's one sun in the universe, but like these other planetary systems, they also have their own effulgence, their own light. But we're only seeing one sun because we're down here on Earth. We're in the middle planetary system. Pur Bhuvasva. So the Brahmins, they chant Om Pur Bhuvasva. That means the sun is traveling through these three planets. These are the three middle planetary systems. 8th, 9th, and 10th. And above that you have Marchaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satchaloka, which are not, the sun does not travel there. And below they don't get the sun either because they're under the earth. No sun for those underground.
So these higher planetary systems, is it so we are not able to see anything above the pole star?
No, we're not seeing them. Because all the planets we're seeing, the stars are all moving. Except the pole star, that's the only one that doesn't move. Pole star is like this. He's in one place. He's going around. And he's got these ropes. These called astral cords. And they're connected to the planets. He's going. And they're all spinning around. It's not just by accident that they happen to keep their perfect orbits exactly. No, it's a plan.
Maharaj, I hope this is a stupid question, but can you please expand what a Bhuvasva means?
Bhuloka, that's our earthly plane. That's one planetary system, and Bhuvar is the antariksha, the next planetary system up. It's like the inner space, up to a few hundred miles up. And then above that is Svargaloka, the heavenly planets. They're in that plane.
Maharaj, there this some we have seen some pictures about what it's like in Mars. So are they just a hoax or is there some background to it? And what is your understanding about?
Did they show any people there?
No.
No.
And what is your understanding about about the probes they claim to be sending to Mars and Jupiter? Is it true or are they just collecting the money and showing fields?
Well, Prabhupada used some, you know, he had different ways to approach it. One thing he said was that if they spent so much money and they actually went to the moon, so why don't they go again? Why is it that they've abandoned it? When they spend money and they go someplace, then they like to utilize it, right? And if they wasted the money on something so useless as just a few stones, then we have to question their integrity, also their intelligence. Why would they spend so much money just to get a few stones? And they say the stones resemble exactly those found in Arizona. So then you wonder, why did we spend so many trillions of dollars to get stones that resemble those exactly of Arizona? Now they're not going there anymore. Now they don't talk about it. Now we have a new one, Mars. So if you put your trust in that, that's your business. But
yeah, Maharaj, it's possible that even the satellites with different countries claim to fire outside Earth's atmosphere, because there is this one Allen belt, so maybe even satellites cannot cross this, so they are sitting everywhere.
Of course, there are different movies coming out showing how it's a hoax. But anyway, at least we know that even if they did go, they weren't able to remain there and they weren't able to see what was actually happening. Because if they went to the moon and they say there's no life, there's no plants, there's no trees, but actually the Soma, he's in charge of vegetation. So it seems odd that a person is in charge of vegetation and the moon is giving so much nourishment to plants all over the universe. There's room for doubt.
Maharaj, other scriptures, like other so-called scriptures for the King, Bible and other Quran or something, do they have some concept of this?
They have some cosmology, but it's not as vast and deep as the Vedic. Based on a few kind of obscure passages, but nothing like this. That's why Carl Sagan said this is really something. This is the best. So, but the Bible also agrees with the idea of geocentric. So that much we agree on. And if the Bible agrees, that means the Islam, they would also agree, because they're based on the Bible too. And of course, Buddhist is based on the Vedic, and Jain is based on the Vedic. So, pretty much, if you take the religious consensus, then yes, you would have a geocentric model. The Buddhist is just the Vedic, but, you know, with their own kind of aberrations. Like that, but it all comes. Buddhism is only 2,600 years old, so it takes the Vedic and it gives it its own twist. Same thing with Jain. So the Vedic is that's the solid evidence. Therefore, if we take the Vedic knowledge, we don't have to keep changing theories every few years, throwing the books out. No, throw them out again. we can keep the same. That's what's so nice about it. You don't have to keep changing your knowledge.
Maharaj, still continuing about this probe, so is it possible to send anything out from this earth, like due to this Van Allen belt? Like, it's, I don't know so much about astronomy or so, but I've understood it's like blocking anything from going out from this earth.
Well, there's different theories. But this is not our field, to the empirical field. We're basing our planetarium on Bhagavatam, on the Puranas. And if they, people can consider it. And if they're satisfied, then they can accept it. It answers all the questions that people like to know in terms of the phases of the moon, the day and night, the seasons, eclipses. And it's been answering these for thousands of years. The Bhagavatam describes that they knew when the eclipse was coming at Kurukshetra, therefore they all went to Kurukshetra. And how did they know? What kind of science did they have that would give them information that the eclipse was coming, and they all wanted to be in Kurukshetra, the holy place? They must have had advanced scientific knowledge. Evaporates it. It draws it out. Just like if you put water outside. Of course, air is also helping. But the demigods, they all work together, all the different elements. Vayu, they're all working as a team. But the sun, he has that ability to draw, to evaporate water from all over the universe. And then he keeps it, then he puts it in the moon, then it's distributed. And again, that would, in order to get into the particulars, the details, we would have to, it's like, with how does Yamaraj know what everyone's actions are, and how does he know? I mean, that's his particular expertise. He's been given that power to decide to judge the actions of people and give them the results. So similarly, the sun, he's been given the ability to practically run the universe in his own way. Draws out the water and redistributes it through the moon. No.
Is it the same milk ocean with
Kubaloka? No, different one. There's different milk oceans, just like there's different saltwater oceans. And there's different abodes, even on this universe of Vishnu. Some below, some above, some middle.
Lord Chaitanya's time, Bhagavatam was so much discussed, like 10th canto at least, so much he used to, listen. What about the other parts, like this 5th canto, which has this universe, this structures and all, so that was not discussed or in Lord Chaitanya's time. So they haven't explained everything about the Goswamis.
Well, okay, that brings us to the next point. Along with this DVD that we prepared, we also produced 4 books as the basis of the evidence. These four books are at the printer right now. They'll be printed within a few days. And then you'll have 2,700 pages worth of evidence from the commentaries. We have 11 commentators on the fifth canto, Vaishnava commentators, Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Bira Raghava. So yes, they have given kind, you'll get it all. Sanskrit and English, it's all there. We took the Sanskrit, it's never been presented in English before. This is the first time. So we took the entire commentary on the 11 chapters of Cosmology of the fifth canto. All the, we used the same book that Prabhupada used. He used that, these acharyas, the 10. So we used the same book, and we got the best translator in India to translate these. So we have the whole thing, 850 pages on that commentary. So you'll be able to see what our Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas say about it.
Also, he made a question about sometimes we see a shooting star in the sky. So what is that? Is it that some, he made the point, is it that some of these astral cores...
Who made the point? Oh, he made the point. I don't have that information.
And together with this Rahu, there is another mystical planet, Ketu.
It's the same, the head and the tail. So, yes, Ketu is also there. All right. Well, thank you for your answer.
One more question was that in the Western conception they say that Earth is surrounded by this atmosphere and that in the space there is no air. But what do the Vedas say about space? Is it that there is air also in space?
No, it's more subtle. As far as at least we know ether itself or space is subtle. Whether there's air there, yes, there's air there. It's like in the sun. Prabhupada said it's not that it's all fire. It's predominantly fire. There's other elements there also. Just like here, it's predominantly earth, but we also have some fire. We have some water. Some, but the predominantly he gave the example that just like if a man is, you know, in an area where there's a big fire or something, he's working in a big factory, there's a lot of fire. So it doesn't mean he's consumed by the fire. There's fire there and there's other elements as well.
Said that the scientists discovered a planet between Earth and Moon 3 months ago. So she wants to know whether that planet is Rahu.
I don't know whether that planet is Rahu.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they discovered another planet. Maybe if they go there, then they can give us some more information. But we have a hard time with you know, accepting that this, that their discoveries are to be taken as fully authentic, because there's no proof for them, there's no evidence. We have to just take their word for these things, and we know that they're, there's some defects. Just like when you, if you look back, who is it that who is it that was the president of the United States when we arrived on the moon? Mr. Nixon, not the most trustworthy person. So, put your trust in such a person.
Maharaj, India has this Bhagavatam and everything. Still, they are now claiming that they want to go to.
It shows how they are following the path of the foolish. They have the Vedic culture, they have everything, but instead they want to. That's unfortunate. Therefore, the Krishna conscious movement has to become prominent to stop the foolishness. Therefore, we have to do a lot of preaching. Prabhupada wanted the scientific preaching. He wanted his planetariums to be presented so that people could have an alternative. Otherwise, they're accepting this void theory. Everything comes from a void. Everything's happening by accident. There's no intelligence behind it. There's no God. Everything is just random, chaotic. Except if you say their theories are chaotic and accidental, then they become very offended. They want to take full credit for those.
Maharaj, my last question is about this Manu, father of mankind. So, does he have his own planet, or where is he residing?
Different Manus. You can look in the Bhagavatam, it describes that he, when he came to visit Priyavrata, you know, Priyavrata was there, he was in the heavenly planets with Narad Muni, and then Manu came. You can check and see where he was residing at that time. There's different Manus also. That was Swayambhuva Manu.
Which candle?
Alright, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
His Holiness Dhanavir Goswami Maharaj ki jai.